Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Corey Curtis from News 2. He'll drop by for his weekly visit at 8 o'clock coming up to begin next hour. Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel at 9 to discuss Tennessee heading to Omaha for the first time since 2005. We'll have that conversation coming up in a couple hours with Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Right now, though, getting into the Tennessee Titans, and Joe, obviously last week with the acquisition of Julio Jones, we spent a lot of time discussing this offense for the Titans, what it could look like, how explosive it could be, and just where it stacks up in the league in terms of the dangerous offenses league-wide. And part of the conversation that was had on our text line while we were having these thoughts on Julio Jones was, yeah, that's all great and that's good, but this defense, what's the defense going to look like? It was horrible last year. How much better can it really be with the changeovers that we've seen? We added it up. Looks like there's going to be at least six new starters on the defensive side of the ball to begin next season. Obviously, a lot of change in the secondary as well. And Bud Dupree coming in to bolster the pass rush to Nico Autry as well. So when you factor in the new players that are coming into the fold, and some of the older veterans that have been here for a while, like Kevin Byard, Rashawn Evans heading into a contract year as well, who do you think has the most to prove on the defensive side of the ball? If you had to identify a player that has the most to prove this year for the Titans on the defensive side of the ball, how would you take that question? Where would you go with that answer? I think there's a lot of different options.
My first thought is Rashawn Evans, you know, because you're talking about a guy who – things looked like they were going a certain way after his second year, and then some ups and downs last year. I would say definitely the wrong way in his third year. Guy whose option hasn't been picked up, a guy who right now looks like he's entering his last year with the Titans, and they draft Monty Rice. I mean, it looks like, you know, Rashawn Evans, this is a big, big prove-it year for him. So that's where I would start. I also do think of Kevin Byard. Kevin Byard still was good last year. But remember, before last year, it was like, is he the best safety in the game?
Yeah.
I don't hear anybody asking that anymore. And it comes down to, you have to make more plays than he made last year. I don't think there's anything different with him in terms of, like, how he prepares, his overall ability. I still think he is one of the best safeties in the NFL. But he's got, this is a year where you want him to make more impactful plays that influence the outcomes of games. And I think last year there wasn't enough of that, and there were some moments where he got beat, where he was singled up with someone in the red zone or whatever it is, where it's like, man, you want him to make that play or not give up that play. So those two guys come to mind, but like you said, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities.
There's a lot of possibilities. I mean, in the secondary, other than Byard, I mean, you've got a lot of young guys coming in. Christian Fulton, it's a massive year for him coming in. His second year, really the first full look that we're going to get at Christian Fulton. At Major Mark West on Periscope says, Byard and Simmons. We were told when he was drafted Simmons would be a Pro Bowler by now. What do you think about the idea of Jeffrey Simmons having the most to prove on the Titans defense this year?
Yeah, I agree. I think Simmons has been good, and I think at times it's like, okay, that is a Pro Bowler. That's the Pro Bowler. I think Simmons, I frankly think that the second half of his season last year, or around second half, I don't know, I'd have to go back and look at when everything happened, but basically the second half of the season, I mean, he was healthy.
Yeah.
But that's a big part of this league, too. I mean, that was part of the gamble of drafting him. ACL, it still means something, especially for the big guys. And I thought the way he really came on late in that rookie year, after finally being careful and, rehabbing and making sure he was ready, was like, wow, this guy could be a monster. And then he was at times, especially I think in the first half of his second year, not as much in the second half. So I agree with that. I mean, the Titans need him to be that type of player, that level of player, for this defense to be what they want it to be. So And I also think that Danico Autry should help him. But health, I think, is a huge key for him. And just making more plays.
Yeah, like I think he's got to get to a different level from a pass rushing standpoint. Now, with the position he plays, I mean, you're not expecting Jeffrey Simmons to go out there and get 12 sacks. Like, it's just not what you're expecting to happen. But I do think he can be much more of a factor in that area than he has been.
Yeah, the numbers, I mean, hey, it's great. Like, like Aaron Donald or somebody like that. Hey, you'd love him to be that kind of player. But the numbers aren't. Jeffrey Simmons could have 2.5 sacks this year and be a Pro Bowler and be dominant. Now, if he can get 6 or 7, that'd be better. It'd be lot cooler if he did. But it's not about the numbers. It's just about the edge is where you always focus on with pass rush. But if you can really be disruptive and get that pressure and just affect the quarterback from the inside, everything else is easier. It's easier on the edge guys. And it's tougher on the opposing offense, and that's what they need from Jeffrey Simmons.
So I think when you're asking the question of which member of the Titans defense has the most to prove heading into this year, I think a lot of fans would say, well, probably the guy you're paying $16 million to come in and affect the pass rush, and that is Bud Dupree. And we know how good Bud Dupree has been in Pittsburgh, obviously at T.J. Watt on the other side as well, and Bud Dupree coming off an ACL injury, but last year, 11 games, 8 sacks. You look at his numbers the last couple of years while he's been in the lineup, pretty good. I mean, the sack total, if you're just judging by that, 8 sacks last year, 11.5 in 2019, and played 16 games in 2019 and 18 as well. So when you factor in his history, his age, he's still 28 years old, not old in this league, and coming off an ACL injury with the money he's being paid, what do we think this season should look like for Bud Dupree? How much pressure do you think is on Bud Dupree coming in, given the salary that he's made? I mean, the Titans are paying him to be an elite-level pass rusher in this league. I know there are injury concerns, but if you're paying him to be an elite-level pass rusher in this league, to me, that's what my expectations are for Bud Dupree coming into this season.
Yeah, and last year, 8 sacks, 11 games. So basically, he's been a double-digit sack guy 2 years in a row.
Yep.
After his first 4 years, he was kind of a reserve a little bit, and then he became a starter. So he has 4 sacks, 4.5, 6, 5.5. Then he has that big breakout year in 19, and he was continuing it last year. The question will always be there, how much are those numbers impacted by some of the other guys on that defense who – made it harder for offenses to figure out who to block. I mean, you can't argue to me that there wasn't some impact, but I think the expectation when you pay someone that kind of money is double-digit sacks. Could Bud Dupree have a great 7-sack year and help others and the overall defense is better and he affects the quarterback a lot and gets a lot of pressure? Yes. I mean, coaches will always say, you guys look at sack numbers. We look beyond that. We do look at affecting a quarterback. You can – or you run a quarterback into someone else, or you just – you speed them up just enough that you get an incompletion. I mean, and that's fine. They look deeper, and there are advanced stats for all that stuff too. So it doesn't – it's not to say that, like, Bud Dupree can only have a good year if it's double-digit sacks, but he needs to get the quarterback to the ground a fair amount, and he needs to be a constant – presence as a pass rusher. He needs to be a problem. He needs to be a guy who has to be doubled a fair amount. I mean, I think that, like, you can see it out there. Is he out there causing problems for teams, or is he every once in a while he sneaks through? I mean, you could have a 10 sack season where you're more like that, and you could have a 6 sack season where you're a constant presence. And that's what a coach will say, is like, I'd take that guy over just the guy who has the better numbers.
Our buddy Kinston on Periscope says, this year won't be about sacks for Dupree. More interested in how he performs during a playoff push. He should be close to form during the second half of the year. Booking my Super Bowl tickets, tighten up. Kinston very confident.
There you go. Well, that is another – I mean, that's a fair point, too, for Dupree is, does he get – like, if he is able to play in the opener, and I don't know if he will be or not, what percentage of Bud Dupree is he? I mean, health-wise, it's got to be 100. He's not going to play. You're not going to mess around with that. But just, you know, having not played for so long, is it going to take him some time? He probably, you know, should get a little bit of time to try to get going. But but once he's on the field, the expectation is he's Bud Dupree.
Yeah. That's what you've paid him to come in here and be, is Bud Dupree and an elite-level pass rusher. And we'll see whether or not he's able to do that. We're taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Who has the most to prove for the Titans this year on the defensive side of the ball? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. 1025 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered up to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in later today and every Monday to Darren, Donick, and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 1025 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game, discussing the Titans and the defensive side of the ball. Which Titan has the most to prove on the defensive side of the ball heading into the season? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ryan Porth, how would you go about answering that question? As you look at the Titans on the defensive side of the ball, a lot of candidates for this question. Who do you think has the most to prove for the Titans on defense heading into this season as you evaluate the defensive side of the ball here for the Titans under year two, I guess. Technically year one of Shane Bowen as defensive coordinator.
Year two.
Is it year two or year one?
How do we go about? Year two.
The title says year one.
That's a good question. I don't know. That's a good question. Year one and a half?
Yeah. Maybe so.
Year two.
Porth's having none of it.
It's year one as only defensive coordinator. Yeah. He's not coaching outside linebacker.
This is true. This is true. I would probably say Kevin Byard. Okay. I mean, he's proven a lot before last season, but last season was not good for Kevin Byard.
Yep.
And they're going to need Kevin Byard these next few seasons to get back to the level that he was at pre-2020. So, you know, there were way too many times where he was a turnstile on defense last year, trying to make a tackle and just could not wrap up or was out of place positionally. I think Kevin Byard's got to be at a complete other level than he was at last year.
Well, and I think the interesting part to that too, Joe, is, all right, if the pieces around him, like if the other members of the secondary, you've got a lot of young guys, and we're going to get to Caleb Farley here in just a second, but you've got Christian Fulton, you've got, you know, Elijah Molden, you would think playing some sort of role this year. Who knows? Maybe Brady Breeze back there at some point. Imani Hooker. There are a lot of young guys coming into this secondary. And that's going to require, I would think, a lot of directing of traffic from Kevin Byard as to what he's doing back there in the secondary. Does that slow him down? If the pass rush is significantly better than it was a year ago, how much does that help Kevin Byard? Or, you know, can he, even with factors not working his way, can he get himself back to a level where he's not as noticeably off as he was a year ago? That, to me, is a really interesting question with him moving into this year. What exactly is he?
Yeah, right. Well, and this also, I mean, if you're going to compare like Evans and Byard, well, I mean, one of them makes a whole bunch more money than the other does. You know, that's another thing. I mean, Kevin Byard is paid to be an elite defensive player. You know, I mean, the only cap number higher, he was number one. He is now just behind Julio Jones on this team in terms of cap hit this year. So that tells you right there, he's paid to be elite. So if you're not elite, that's a problem. It's not just being good. You're not paid to just be good. And I agree, there were times when he just, in coverage, he got victimized last year. Do I think that it has to do with bad corners and bad pass rush to a large extent? Yeah. I mean, safeties are going to make more plays on defenses where cornerbacks cover people well and where pass rushers actually force quarterbacks to make mistakes. Didn't have a lot of that last year with this defense. But still, he's got to make those plays. And when he's in those situations with a tight end or a slot receiver or whatever in the red zone, he's got to not give up the touchdown. I mean, there's still some moments for him last year that were disappointing on their own, independent of everything else.
Well, there were, and, you know, a lot of those I thought happened in the run game too. Like I think back to, I mean, the game against Dalvin Cook where he just lit up the entire team. I mean, there were two runs that I can remember where Kevin Byard just totally took the wrong angle. And there's Dalvin Cook running down the sideline. I mean, that's going to happen every now and then against really elite players and big running backs and, you know, probably the second best running back in the league behind Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook. I thought that happened a lot last year with Kevin Byard. And the other part is this, and I think this is more where what's happening around him may be a factor. I mean, look at Kevin Byard's career so far. 2017, 8 picks. 4 picks in 2018. 5 picks, 2019. He had one last year, and I believe it was against Chase Daniel in garbage time of the Lions game. I mean, he had one interception. So you're talking about, you know, a guy that typically has been a pretty big playmaker for the Titans in the secondary. I think that, to me, is where the defense around him kind of shows up the most of there's not enough pressure on the quarterback to force some of those bad throws. And when you're trying to, you know, overcompensate for Jonathan Joseph getting left behind 5 yards into somebody's route, it's hard to make plays that way on the ball.
Well, and I think you alluded to this, Robbie, but the fact that he's the leader in the secondary and the lone returning starter with some new faces around him. Amani Hooker has never been a full-time starter in the NFL. You have some young corners. You've got Janoris Jenkins. Don't really know what he's going to be at corner. I mean, you cannot afford to have Kevin Byard have a 2020-esque season in 2021. You just can't.
Yeah. Right. He's the leader of a totally, totally different secondary now. And he loses an emotional leader in Malcolm Butler. He loses, I think, another motivational veteran in Kenny Vaccaro. So there's also more on his plate, I would say. Like now it's like it's Byard and it's a bunch of young guys slash new guys. You know, before it was still, you know, some veterans who had probably big voices in that room. And now he's the voice. So that's another aspect of this. Of course, if you're him, you're hoping like, okay, Fulton, here he is, year two. You can see him better. Oh, Caleb Farley, hey, this rookie's really good. You know, Molden. Jenkins can come in and be about what Butler was, I guess you hope. I know some people might say they think maybe he could be better than Butler. I don't know. I mean, I think he's a pretty good corner.
Butler was pretty good last year.
Yeah, Butler was pretty good. I mean, you know, he had his moments where, you know, he got turnstiled too, but he had a lot of games where I thought he really competed and his physicality mattered to them. So if you're Byard, it's you lose some of that, but you hope that you gain just better play, and that should help him. But yes, at times, like, he's got to be the guy who makes the read, makes the play, makes the difference.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Got a texter that says, Caleb Farley has the most to prove. It's not his fault. It's John Robinson's fault. What do you think of the idea of Caleb Farley having the most to prove on the defensive side of the ball this year?
So Caleb Farley's back has the most to prove?
I guess so.
Is that? Yeah.
The Skiatika.
There we go. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's another, like, John Robinson gamble thing. But, like, the player himself, I would not say. I mean, I guess any first-round pick, there's some level of that. But I think there's.
Well, we need to see him on the field. That'd be a good start.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, what he needs to prove
the first round
is
pick from a year ago.
He needs to prove that he's healthy, first of all. And then, if he is healthy and he's out there, then, okay. All right, so why was he the first-round pick? But I wouldn't put him ahead of some of the guys we've been talking about who have played in this league and are facing big seasons.
I wouldn't put him ahead of those guys either, but I do think there is some level, to the texter's point, like, this is another situation where you feel like you're right there. You're right on the doorstep of being a team that can really compete for a Super Bowl. I mean, a year ago, you're coming off an AFC title game appearance. You take Isaiah Wilson in the first round. We know what happened with that. If you come into this year and you get little to no, you know, production out of your first-round pick again, I don't know that's necessarily squarely on Caleb Farley. To me, that's a lot on John Robinson as well. But I do think from that standpoint, I mean, there is a lot of pressure on Caleb Farley to come in and work out. Whether that pressure or the result of that is directed at Caleb Farley or whether it's directed at John Robinson, I do think there's a lot of pressure on him to come in and work out pretty early.
and then come in and press Tyreek Hill.
Just don't even let him off the line.
That's right. You get to travel with Tyreek Hill the whole game. I'm sure that Titans defensive coaches will make that happen so he can prove himself. But he is very confident. And look, man, the guy hasn't played football in a long time. So there's got to be, to me, some leeway between just the long layoff and the back. And he's a rookie in the best league in the world. But when you're a first-round pick, usually that window is pretty small. And people start asking for, okay, let's see it. Let's see that first-round pickness.
Well, I think it gets magnified this year, too, just based on the way the first-round pick went a year ago. Like, I think if it's a normal situation and your first-round pick from last year works out, maybe he's not an elite player, but works out where they're at least productive for you. Like, I don't think there's a ton of pressure on John Robinson or Caleb Farley to come in and immediately be impactful this year. I think based on what we saw with Isaiah Wilson, like if Caleb Farley halfway through the season is not a factor with this team, Titans fans are going to be irate about that you've selected another player in the first round that comes in and doesn't immediately provide you with help.
No question. I mean, some of these teams – you know, like to our Mike Sando at The Athletic, you know, at least one other team was like, his medical was terrible. Was the word he used. And some teams, and look, some teams are just like maybe they're overly cautious with just like, you know what, I'm just not even going to mess with that. And sometimes maybe they miss out on a good player.
Yep.
I don't know that you necessarily want to be the opposite of that, which is every possible hurt guy you can try to bring in, you're willing to do. Now, look, Jeffrey
Simmons.
There's
no medical report that I can't tolerate.
Yeah, give me that medical report. Now, look, you can get better value that way. I mean, I think Jeffrey Simmons, we talked about him. He's another guy in this discussion, certainly. And if he ends up being what they hope he is this year and overall, then there's an example of that working out for you. You know, taking advantage of an injury and getting value out of it. But, yeah, if some of these teams who claim that they thought his medical was terrible, they end up being right. Then again, it's like, okay, so how did they have that information? What did they know? And how did you not have it? Or what are you ignoring? Or whatever it is.
Let's be honest. Like, if that happens, I mean, the Titans have got a pretty serious problem. Like, we can't continue to be in situations where other teams, I mean, throw in Rashad Weaver to this situation as well. Like, you can't continue to be in situations where other teams apparently know things that you don't. Like, that cannot continue to be a talking point around John Robinson and the Titans. So,
right.
Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, if Caleb Farley comes in and, you know, tears his ACL or something, that the Titans were just wrong about his medical. I'm talking about the back injury here. But if that's a problem this year and it's a problem to the point where he can't get on the field consistently, and that's a big-time question as you move forward, I think it is fair to start looking around at the Titans and saying, all right, why can you guys not seem to figure this out when other teams can?
No, it's absolutely fair. Look, now the Isaiah Wilson thing, it's pretty sparse still. I know some people want to look at it and say, well, this team, the red flag, this and that. The red flags around him were, they weren't much. There wasn't much there. So, but it's still going to get lumped in with all this.
Sure.
I mean, I think you still you have to look at each case individually. But the Farley case in particular is a gamble, and there are other corners, and some of this will also be that comparison, right? Like, if Newsom goes into Cleveland and is great, you know, then it's like, so why not take this guy who is probably similar in talent level and you don't have any issues? I mean, all that stuff's going to come into play. But, I mean, their confidence in him – there wasn't much ambiguity there, you know? I mean, they did everything, as far as we know, that they could get information on him. And he seems very confident.
Yeah.
So, big one of many big storylines in about 6 weeks when they gather for camp.
Coming up next, we'll continue to the conversation on the Titans defense. Got some of your thoughts to get to on our text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Also, what would we consider to be a successful season for Bud Dupree? We'll get into that coming up next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Go to thegamenashville.com to check out Nashville's best deals. This week's new deal is a $50 gift card for only $25 to Nashville's newest and largest axe-throwing venue, Bad Axe Throwing Nashville in downtown at 648 Fog Street. Aim for a great time at Bad Axe Throwing Nashville while enjoying panoramic downtown views, live music on the Bad Axe stage, curated cocktails from the full bar, and Northwoods-inspired menu with a southern twist. Other deals happening now include a $30 Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House gift card for only $15, and buy one, get one free for Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon, $30 Party Foul gift cards for only $15, and $20 Grain and Berry gift cards for only $10. You can check all those out now while they last at thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Discussing the Titans defense, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Got a texter that says, Kevin Byard will be fine next year. We literally had the worst pass rush in NFL history last year. No one had a good year last year besides maybe Jeff Simmons. So we talked about the importance of a bounce-back season for Kevin Byard. At least one texter there, very confident that Byard's going to be fine this year with the new, and I guess we'll see whether or not it's improved defense in front of him.
Well, look, I think he'll be much better if there's a pass rush. I think anyone in any secondary looks better or worse based on whether the quarterback is affected or not. And we know how that went last year. So that's one big hope for him that's just out of his hands.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, is J-Rob trusting the team doctors about Caleb Farley or any other person's injury? So if they're wrong, shouldn't they look into a new medical staff at that point?
Well, the answer is yes on the first part there. And, I mean, I think the problem with this this was still a better year than like last year in some ways. They got a fair amount done last year. They did have a combine last year, you know. So, but this year, I guess this year probably overall was still worse, you know, because there was no combine. So there wasn't the same level of your medical people get to look at whoever you want to look at. There was sharing of information with that. But John Robinson said, I mean, they went. You know, Farley was a person of high interest in this process, so
yep.
They got all the information they could get and felt confident with it. I suppose that, hey, if it's a disaster, I mean, again, I just would love to know the team that said it was terrible. What did they hear from their medical people that the Titans did not hear from their medical people? Clearly, there was different analysis, you know, and back stuff, as people have pointed out. It's just one of those things that is never a past tense injury. But there's also like Rob Gronkowski, similar stuff. He seemed all right. So I don't know. Yeah, I would say that if it goes bad and it's just like he never has anything close to the career because of the back, then you'd have to look at the process and the medical people who gave the okay and say, what did you miss?
Go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that asks, have you heard anything lately from Dupree or Farley? Are they rehabbing in Nashville?
Dupree, I don't know. Farley is here, I believe. Yeah, Farley, did he talk to us? I want to say maybe he talked after one of the OTAs, which, of course, he wasn't on the field.
Right.
I think that's right. So, yeah, I believe, yeah, he's here. I'm not sure about Dupree. But
as long as he's rehabbing, I mean,
right. I would expect that's the case. You know, it's a question that can be asked this week. We're going to get all kinds of interviews and stuff this week. Assistant coaches talk today. And yep. Then of course, mini camp the next 3 days after this, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So, but yeah, they'll be around.
Mike on the text line, any chance the Titans would revisit Kenny Vaccaro? I believe he is still a free agent.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't think so at this point.
I mean, the plan, clearly the plan was that's salary that needs to be cut, and Amani Hooker is ready to step in. And I think he is ready to step in and be a good safety. You, of course, now are less deep there. You know, it was great to have him as your three for when someone gets hurt or in different situations. I mean, he was out there a fair amount last year, so – that's the next question, is the depth at safety. But, no, I mean, Vaccaro is, If they use any of this money that's there after what they've done to get in Julio Jones, I think it would be probably on the tight end front.
So the secondary, obviously a lot of what happens in the secondary is going to depend on the pass rush that they're able to generate in front. And Bud Dupree, a big part of that. We talked about how much money he's making coming into this year. 11.5 sacks in 2019, 8 sacks last year in 11 games before sustaining the ACL injury. Assuming that Bud Dupree is healthy and he comes back in and he's ready to go, what would we consider to be a successful season for Bud Dupree? Because there are a lot of positions in football where you can't really put a number on it. Like, I mean, you said it last year with Clowney coming in. Clowney could have 3 sacks for the Titans and still have a pretty successful year. I agree with that. I don't really feel the same way about Bud Dupree. Like, to me, he's got to be a guy that comes in, and there's got to be a sack total that goes along with it. I don't know if it necessarily has to be, you know, right at 10 or 11, but he's got to get pretty close. Like, there needs to be a pretty significant sack number attached to his name based on the salary that he's making. Now, as others have pointed out as well, it's not like that's all Bud Dupree can do. He's also very good in the run game. I think you feel good about him in pretty much every aspect of the defense. So I think he's going to have an impact beyond just the pass rush and the sack totals that you have. But I don't view Bud Dupree coming in here. Like, if Bud Dupree ended up with 5 sacks, to me that's not good enough based on what you're getting paid.
Right. Well, another guy who I thought actually was pretty good last year, who we haven't talked about yet, was Harold Landry. I mean, yep. If we're going to say who had good years on the D last year. I mean, I think Harold Landry, and some of it is just that he has to play every snap. I think he was a pretty good player. Would you like more from him? Sure, you'd like more. So what if Bud Dupree comes in this year and is so good that he's basically got to be double-teamed all the time, and Landry has an uptick and gets close to double-digit sacks, and yeah. Bud Dupree has 5 or 6.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think – I mean, some of this just isn't statistical. I agree that if you have X amount of dollars and you play that position, there's got to be a sack number tied to it. But I think Bud Dupree, if he's consistently effective and hard to block – and makes plays and helps others make plays, you know, and the defense is better, all these things, if he has this an impact on everything around him and it gets better because of his presence, well, then, to me, that's a good year. It doesn't have to be double-digit sacks. But if you want to just say, right now, it's just like, I mean, offensive players, okay, what's a good year for Derrick Henry? You know, 1,400 yards, whatever it is, 1,200 yards. Ryan Tannehill, you know, you want to have a – you know, whatever your quarterback rating to be a certain thing or whatever. I mean, you would automatically just say double-digit sacks for Dupree.
Yeah.
I just think it's possible. It's possible to have a better year with fewer sacks, and it's possible to have a deceivingly high number of sacks. Like Vic Beasley gets signed by the Titans after his 8-sack year.
Yeah.
That clearly was fool's gold, right? So, I mean, it's just there's limitations to any stat.
Sure. And I think another big part of this for Bud Dupree is, I mean, one of the questions that I had, even thinking back to before the Titans signed him in free agency, was, all right, if you're bringing in Bud Dupree, because he was an option we talked about a lot, how much of what he's done is because T.J. Watt has been on the other side? I mean, Stephon Tuitt's been in there as well. He's got a lot of things to work with on that defensive front in Pittsburgh. I mean, you go from, you know, in 2018, 5.5 sacks in 16 games. That jumps up to 11.5, jumps up to 8 last year in 11 games as well. So right back on a similar trajectory. Now, some of that, I think, is just growing as a player and improving in this league. But I do think having T.J. Watt obviously helps on the other side. I'm interested to see coming into this defense where obviously there's no T.J. Watt on the other side. How big of a factor can he be individually in his play without having that superstar on the other side as well?
Yeah, and of course he got asked questions like this when he came in, and he basically his answer was, hey, go watch the film. And if you watch film of him, he is a fun player to watch. He's a reckless, aggressive player. So he's certainly going to be motivated to prove that he doesn't need that support. But how could you – I mean, look, how could you say that it doesn't matter? It does, and it should matter. You know, when you get another great player on the other side, that's exactly what you're hoping to find. And I'm sure there was a benefit there from him. doesn't mean he can't come in here and be impactful, but you know, those are two things that can be true. I mean, TJ Watt no doubt helped him. Did he help TJ Watt? I'm sure. It's a mutually beneficial relationship that the Titans hope that, you know, Landry and Dupree can have. But that, I think that also means Landry's got to improve. So, I mean, look, the guy works hard. He's been a pretty good pass rusher. The two of them, I think, could be a good combo.
Coming up next, it is that time of the week, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road lays it on the line. Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star.
And it is that time of the week, time for the Rex Rant here on 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, Joe Rex Road, every Monday at 7:45. Throws it out there on the Rex Rant. He had kind of a mini Rex Rant last Friday, too. But we got another one for you today at 7:45. A little Smash Mouth bringing us back in there.
Did I say I hate Smash Mouth?
That's an assumption on my part because they're kind of like Blink 182 a little bit.
Wow. Do you think so?
Do I think they're like Blink 182?
Yeah. I've never thought of that. I'm all right. I didn't hate that song, man. I'm in a better mood,
Joe,
now.
Big Smash all Mouth right. fan.
I mean,
hey, it's a good song, man.
Bad assumption on my part.
Yeah,
it's a good song. Yeah, you know, they had the one song that was in Shrek.
I'm a Believer.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Is that the only
just
one?
Just the
they
remix
had?
Version.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they're fine. Yeah. But
I'm very
knew?
Surprised.
Who
to
knew
hear you
Joe
Rex
wrote a big Smash Mouth?
I know. Hey,
I would not have pegged that.
Hey, listen. Again, like I like the band Kaja Goo Goo from the 80s. Okay.
Who? Sure. Yeah.
They
Kaja Goo who?
Kaja Goo Goo. They sing a song called Too Shy. It's a great one-hit wonder. I'm just saying, like, I'm not a music snob.
I think I know that song, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
You're a little bit of a music snob.
That's not true. I just have strong opinions. I like some things that most people would say that's terrible, and then I hate some things that a lot of people might say it's good. It's just opinionated.
That's okay.
Right?
It's okay.
I think snobbery is part of this. All right, so... Here's what I wanted to say today. So I was at the – actually, it's funny because I heard Blink 182 the other night live. And it was – whatever.
Did you?
It was fine. Yeah.
Live?
So, well, I was at the bar, and this is the point of this story. So I was at the bar the other night, okay, which was awesome. It's good to be vaccinated and at bars. And watching one of my favorite 80s cover bands, Rubik's Groove, play. Now, Rubik's Groove, they play 80s and 90s, okay?
All right.
Where?
It was at Wheeler's Raid in Nolensville.
Okay.
I'm all over the Nolensville bar scene, okay? Our two bars.
Big bar scene.
Yeah. So they do 80s and 90s. They did play, they had a little 90s set with Blink 182. And I was like, just get that out of your set. Get that out of your set, Rubik's Groove. But anyway, so I'm having a conversation with a friend who's 32.
Okay.
And we were talking about, because I'm like, you know, we rip on millennials, but I actually have said many times, I kind of think millennials in some ways better than Gen X, my generation. And he said, well, you know, we're the last generation that played outside.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't thought about that way, but I think there's something to that. And, you know, I did that too. We were outside all the time. I mean, look, I love my Atari 2600, but basically it was like, you go outside, you play, you pick teams. And it just doesn't happen anymore, right? It's just not the same way. Everything's organized. Everybody has individual coaches. It's just different. It was way more fun, frankly, when I was a kid, in my opinion. It's gotten worse. But my rant is that really we are setting a bad example, okay? The rant is I am a hypocrite. I am full of crap because I lament my kids not going outside, and I complain that they have their faces in their phones all the time, and they worry too much about social media. And, oh, this someone had a party over here, and they liked my post and all this stuff. But I do the same stuff. I mean, I set a bad example. So when a bunch of people my age get together at the bar, I swear inevitably at some point it'll be like this.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone will have their faces in their phones. You know, I mean –
We know Joe Rexroad's not going to be away from Twitter that long.
Exactly. Like, we're just as bad as this, and we don't have the excuse that we were born into it. I mean, our kids were born into it. Like, we are just tech and internet and social media addicts, even though we actually lived in a time that we didn't have it. So, you know, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I have to be better. I have to set an example. Not just demand my kids put their phones away, put the PlayStation controllers away, because they kids know when you're full of crap. And my kids know that I'm full of crap. That's all I got.
I like that. Well, this is interesting, too, because I've thought about this in terms of my future children. Like, I've always been of the mindset of when I have kids, like, they're not getting a cell phone until they're, like, 13. Like, I was about to say, like, I didn't get a cell phone until I was, like, 13 years old. Now, mine was a flip phone. It wasn't a smartphone. I mean, it's just it's a different world now.
And when you were 13 was, like, just when people were starting to get cell phones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a different time now, too. But I've had, like, people, like, I've got a lot of friends, obviously, who have children who are of, you know, 5, 6 years old, and they're on tablets all the time, and they're like, yeah, wise guy, you think you're really smart now and saying that you're not giving your kids all this technology, and then you realize you can't sleep, and they're around you all the time, and watching the iPad or watching something on the phone is the only thing that shuts them up. You'll be getting a cell phone at about age 6 or 7 for your kids. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be able to withstand that or not. My hope would be that I can kind of ease my children into technology. Like, it's unavoidable to some degree. Like, at some point, they're going to have to know how to use these things. And sometimes it's just a safety issue or a convenience issue of you need to have a cell phone. But I'm hoping I can delay that as long as possible.
Yeah, we had the idea of, you know what, they're just going to have – like your basic, and some people do this, like your basic phone where it's just for calling, just for like the safety aspect. But then you get into, okay, how much does that cost? And if you had everything all tied together, and plus what about the benefit of them having like a map on their phone or being able to like do the find the phone thing? And also, like you said, it's been very, very key at times. Hey, just watch this, okay? We didn't have that, right? I mean, it helps you. It's convenience. It's just hard to avoid.
I will say, too, though, it's amazing, and I think I talked to you about this. Like, back in November, my wife and I, we went to the mountains for a weekend. It was great. I put the phone down. I turned it off. I did not look at it for 72 hours. Now, first off, it was really weird. Like, not looking at it, like, every hour. I was kind of freaking out for a little while. But then, like, it became to the point where it's pretty nice not having to look at your phone. I've not done it since then. So apparently it wasn't all that nice. Like, even in the Grand Canyon and in Arizona, I had my phone. Had my phone at the beach, too. But it's just one of those things, like, I was thinking about it. You know, I went a weekend without looking at my phone. I used to do that all the time. Didn't even think about it. Like, the phone was just there in case I needed to call somebody. And now apparently I can't even get through a weekend without looking at this thing. Now, some of that is the job, too, right? I mean, we've got to keep up with what's going on in the world of sports, but I've become way too reliant on this little smartphone.
Yeah, but that's just an excuse, you know?
It is.
Because, I mean, it's just like at home when I'm like, yes, I need to watch this NBA playoff game. We might talk about this on the show tomorrow.
That's right.
What, do you want me to not know what's happening in the NBA playoff game? So we always have the excuse of the phone, but if I didn't do this job, would I be just like, oh, yeah, we're good. Just put it away, and I doubt it.
Porth, when do you think the last time is you went through an entire day without logging onto social media in some form or fashion? Can you remember the last time you did that?
No. I can't.
No.
You just had a honeymoon.
Oh, yeah, I was still on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, come on.
I mean, while people watched at the beach, I also had my phone out.
Yeah.
And was perusing Twitter and ESPN app and reading your articles on the Athletic app.
Of course.
Mr. Rex Road.
Nice. Well, that's important. That is very crucial. Everyone, you know, needs that. Yeah, I mean, it's great, right? I mean, it's great to have access to these things, but I also feel like even in social situation, it just becomes this, I think I'll just look at my phone a little bit here, and then it's like, what are we doing here?
Just all looking on your phone together at the
like,
bar?
Like, we've done the thing where it's like, put your phone away for dinner.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that again this summer when we go on a family vacation, but it doesn't stick.
No. Josh on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Cocoa and Frozen on my phone. Usually get my two-year-old through dinner when we go out. I was in the same mindset as you, Robbie, but it changed quickly when she was screaming at a restaurant one night. See, that's what I'm afraid of. Like, I'll go through this process of, hey, you're not going to have any technology around you, or at least limited technology around you, then my kids are just going to start screaming, and that'll be the end of that. It's a losing battle at that point.
But again, like, how did my parents make it work when we drove from Virginia to Michigan all those times when there was – I mean, what did we have? Maybe I had my little, like, little football game with little dots, beep, 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 you know, or basically had books. Well, how did we ever find each other when you just had to, like, call someone and – you know,
an answering machine.
We'll meet you at this place at this time. How did it ever? Now, you know, like, you can't get away from anyone.
What football game was it?
Beep beep beep. Yeah, the little handheld. Not is it
Tecmo Bowl?
Not Coleco.
Coleco.
No. It wasn't Coleco. No. I'm going to figure this out. But people know what I'm talking about. It was like basically football, and it has an awesome picture of football. But it's just like. Three dots. You go left, middle, right, and you try to get past someone to score it. I mean, it's absolutely
innovative offense.
The game I remember playing in the backseat of the car was on like a little Nokia phone.
Yeah.
And it was just very digitized. It was like a snake, and you tried to make the snake like as large as possible, and then, you know, you lose.
It's a great description.
I think that's what the game was.
Thank you.
I think it's Mattel.
Okay.
Mattel, what I'm Googling. Yeah, there's a lot of pictures of it. Yeah, that's it. It looks like awesome. Like, guy throwing the football. Yeah, and it's like, it's three dots.
Beep, so, beep, beep. So Rex Rant's rant today is we're all way too reliant on technology, and I'm about to get on my phone now when we go to break.
Me too.
So we'll do that.
I've been trembling. It's been taking too long.
It's taken way too long. That is today's edition of the Rex Rant. We do that every Monday morning at 7:45. When we come back, speaking of things we do every week, Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Titans with him. That coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.